Very, very few writers can make a living just writing. Poets are often also teachers, playwrights, plumbers. The school bus driver may be finishing a late-night novel. NPR's Noah Adams, who's been reporting on the low-wage workforce, traveled to Seattle this month to talk with three people about the jobs that help support their writing and often inspire it.
You don't have to imagine all of Seattle to bring yourself to the center of this story. Just picture a big, pale gray house with a peaked roof. It's a community writers' center, named to honor the late poet Richard Hugo. Hugo was a Seattle native. He wrote about the chilly rivers nearby, the weathered shacks of the working people, the sad parts of the city. All his life, Richard Hugo was caught up in the intensity of poetry. Here's how he put it during a college reading in 1982.
I should explain that for 13 years I worked in an aircraft factory, the Boeing Company in Seattle. And when I left, there were 62,000 employees. And it was a matter of complete indifference to 62,000 people, my colleagues there, whether I ever wrote a poem or not. I mean, nobody cared, in other words. And in a way, that's good for a poet, because that means, you know, you, the poet, has to care, and you have to care enough to do it, and that's probably good for us.
The Hugo House is indeed the sort of place he would have liked, people gathering in the interest of words. At a Wednesday afternoon workshop, a spoken word artist named Issei Ionitana thanked his students with an example of his own work.
Revolution is something that can't happen without the youth. It resides within the hearts of the young and restless who run the streets with nothing to lose, for the lost souls who wander the blocks in search of living proof. But as elders attempt to pass the torch, we still act as if we don't know what to do, so we start to lose sight of our mission.
About 10 youngsters had been meeting with Issei around some pulled-together tables, where he encouraged their words to rise in the air.
Wow.
Let's chill. Settle down, and maybe we could work it out. Did you know that song was done by God? Man, was I surprised. Currently, my priorities are graduating from high school and not getting caught up in all the bullshit that takes place at my school.
Into verse.
Happiness,
life,
being happy.
This life that's mine. I'm throwing my heart on the front line. So I'm homeless now, two-spirited, a survivor of genocide, one of the last Alaska natives, and I decide to not forget my history and culture, although I feel somewhat like a vulture when I'm picking at books to find a story or picture of my lost family that was killed. All for gold and greed was my family's blood spilled. And for what? We are at war.
Spoken word for Issei, especially when he performs at a club, is a mixture of theater and poetry.
It exists on a stage. I have nothing in published form at all. All of my works are basically in the air. I always change the cadence, change the posture of the words and how they sound, put emphasis on different words, you know. Yeah, it's always changing. Depends on how I channel all that nervous energy.
Issei Ionitana, 25 years old, is a second-generation Samoan. He didn't finish high school, spent 2.5 years in jail for robbery, and during that time, someone from the Boys and Girls Club of King County would come to visit, offer support. Now Issei works for that club, 30 hours a week, as an education counselor. He also teaches spoken word at various schools, encouraging white kids, Native Americans, youngsters from Ukraine, Ethiopia, tells them they're special and beautiful, wants them to be able to speak out.
Nowadays, man, the youth is so powerful, man, they don't even know. I'm trying to harness that to help them change the world. The short-term vision is so focused versus the long-term. You know, they don't see that. Oh man, 10 years from now, I really am going to dictate the role of this country and what I can do. You know, and so I'm trying to bring that about.
The Richard Hugo House also has a black box theater, where we talk with two men on the empty stage. They're putting together a performance for a series called Writers on Work. One is a director, the other an emergency medical technician. He works for a private ambulance company.
It starts at $9 an hour, and that was after the recent contract went through, so it was bumped up from $7. For a while there, we were making less money taking care of the guy suffocating in front of the burger joint than the people in the burger joint were making burgers.
The experiences of Stephen McCandless will be shaped into a theater piece by playwright and director Brett Fetzer. They've only had one interview session, but Fetzer knows he's got some good stories to work with.
There are a lot of different, I don't actually know for sure what will end up.
Amazon Fire Ants?
I don't know about the Amazon. Well, go ahead and tell that one. There are several things that work on the same level, metaphorically, and there can't be too many of those, but go ahead and tell the Amazon Fire Ant
version. It was just an early model of mine for what I was doing, and I pictured society as a ball of Amazon fire ants that were not being stopped by a river by making the ball of ants and floating across. And we need everyone to stay in a ball. We need ants to be willing to suffer. So I imagine myself as a damp ant. I am an ant that runs back and forth between the dry ants and the wet ants. Sometimes, you know, we can do something for the drowning ants, and sometimes we can't.
Those who get to see this story in performance may learn that Stephen McCandless is 36 and that once he had a big-paying job with Microsoft. He left unhappy during the dot-com boom. Now he says he's still unhappy, but it's about more important things.
I see a lot of the people in emergency medicine as very peculiar people, and they require particular demands and stresses in order to feel connected and alive. And they've found this, and it scratches itches that they can't get scratched anywhere else by any other means. And it really doesn't matter how much money you're getting paid. You can't picture yourself doing anything else.
There is a baseball field across the street from the Richard Hugo House, and there, sitting on the bleachers, we talked with Sarah Catherine Lewis. She uses the term sex worker to describe what she does for a living. She is also a writer. Here is part of an essay about how much she misses kissing.
Kissing. While part of me believes that I will have kissing in my life again at some point, another part of me truly wants to join a convent and let kissing go to those who seem to achieve love and companionship so effortlessly. The ones I see walking around hand in hand, enjoying spring. In other words, kissing is so good that I almost wish to keep it sacred. My memories of kissing while in love, shouldn't that be enough for me?
This is a lyrical example of Sarah Catherine Lewis's writing. She doesn't have a boyfriend at the moment and shares this with her online readers. The daily entries are also vividly pornographic. Details of her work as a professional dominatrix. She's in a co-op situation, sharing dungeon space with other women. She says there is no sexual touching.
9 times out of 10, it's some meek guy who comes in and is very respectful, is very nervous, and basically he just wants to experiment maybe with being tied up, or he wants to experiment with being flogged or something like that. Whatever his interests are that he doesn't feel he can share with his partner. Most of them are married. Most of them have partners.
Sarah Catherine Lewis, 32, has been doing this for 10 years. Doesn't make much. A great night would be $300, less expenses. On the morning shift this day, she says she made nothing. The bus is her transportation. Her bedroom is in a friend's apartment. By the time she's too old to be a sex worker, she hopes to be earning a living as a writer. She already has a following, her fans on the internet.
There are some people that are basically subscribers, and I can see their email addresses, and there are, I'd say, a couple hundred of those.
So every day they expect to find out something new from Seattle?
And I hear about it. Which is great for me, because imagine, you know, you're a writer, you're lazy, you want to watch TV, but you realize you're going to get like 50 emails saying, are you okay? And then it just makes more sense just to sit down and write something.
Writers and workers in Seattle, Washington. Essayist Sarah Catherine Lewis. Theater collaborators Stephen McCandless and Brett Fetzer. And Issei Ayonatana, a spoken word performer. Noah Adams, NPR News, Seattle.
For more information about the Richard Hugo House and the rest of Noah Adams' series on low-wage America, visit our website at npr.org.